This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another episode of Inside the Banjoverse with me and Scal. If you're new, you're very welcome. If you're not, welcome back. I'd like to give a big shout out to all the patrons of the podcast. And if you would like to support me, please head over to patreon.com/endascalbanjo. While you're there, you may even feel inspired to play the banjo. And if so, you are definitely in the right place. Have a look around. There's a lot on offer. My guest on this podcast is none other than the virtuoso concertina player Mohsen Amini, best known for his work with Talisk and Emar. If you've seen Mohsen live, you know that he is an absolute force of nature. And if you know him, you know that he's also a terrifically nice guy. I loved talking with Mohsen. I know him for quite a while, and I hope that you enjoy this conversation with Mohsen Amini.
All right, let's dive in. So we're just going to freewheel it. I mean, it's just a conversation. I'm curious. I know you for a long time, but we've met on the road. Give us a little bit of background about how a Scottish guy with an Iranian father is playing what we'll essentially call Irish concertina, for want of a better description.
Yeah.
Concertinas are not falling off the shelves in Scotland, as far as I know.
No, I just found a little bit of a gap in the market, and I thought I'm going to exploit this. No, I started back when I was about 12 years old, Irish dancing.
let's start there.
Let's unwrap that box.
Because I have an Irish dancing history as well.
Oh, really?
Little known that I was going to say proud, rather. Odd owner of a silver medal from the World Dancing Championships I think I was 11 in an eight hand. So now I'm absolutely fascinated. So let's start with your Irish dancing history.
I am the proud owner of a silver medal in the local Glasgow Fish. That is as far as it got. I loved it. My mum and her friends sent all their kids to Irish dancing, not through anything of being Irish or having Irish roots or anything, nothing to do with that. But there was a local club had started, and they thought they would send us over so then they could go meet up and have coffee. So we went down, and then one of the local cultist branches was playing. And as I like to do, I like to exercise the old ADHD every so often. And went down and just had a couple of goes on the instruments. And my friend, my really good friend now, Mary Campbell, she was running that at the time. And she said, I could come and learn music at Colas for £1 and £1 for an hour. It was nothing. Because it was over. It was like over in Scotland, Colas was started as a way to give music to people that couldn't afford like lessons. So it was really good. So I went over and started doing that. Forgot about the dancing because I was absolutely useless at it, though I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And then started playing music. And I'm slightly glad because my career can now span more than hitting 35.
How were you useless at Irish dancing, Mohsen?
I tend to get distracted. Every so often. I was actually, to be honest, wasn't that useless at it. I was actually quite good at it. But the music came in about maybe like 6 months into dancing, and I thought, I don't fancy the dance as much as the music. And I also made a lot of friends quite quickly play music. So I was like, I just chose between them. I was like, I'll just do music. Do you know what I mean? Literally fell in love with it. I absolutely adored it.
So this is age 12?
Age, I think it's maybe 10, 11 is actually probably what it was. And then the concertina came in about age 12. Genuinely through no one else wanting to take it. They got a concertina into the branch, and everyone was trying it out. No, there was no teachers. No one knew what it was, what to do with it. And I was like, "I'll have me a bit of that." And I got a tune out of it when I picked. Well, I picked it up, and I found a few notes and could play a tune out of it. And then Mary was like, "Just take it, home." So I took it home, and then me and her, for the next like 3 years, would take it week about having the concertina. And we'd try and find out where the notes were and different things on the concertina, because the internet wasn't a thing that had a lot of resources back then anyway, never mind resources for a concertina. So I remember playing every tune in A major with a G for like 3 years, because I didn't know there was a G sharp in the concertina. Debatably still, I don't know there's a G in the G sharp in the concertina, but that's a different thing. But no, for years and years and years did that. About 4 years into it, a woman, Katrina McCardle from the rival Coltis branch, came in and just basically said to me and Mary, in a very, very nice way, she came to teach us for a year and was like, these are all the things you're doing wrong, and these are the small few things you're doing right, and then kind of just molded us back onto the right path for a year, and then let us get to own devices.
So I've never tried to play the concertina, even though my sister is an incredible player. It seems to me like a mind-boggling mathematical equation. What were you doing wrong? And what were the tiny things that you were doing right?
Didn't have the right algorithms. Couldn't get it working. But every so often, you get it.
You're messing around with a Rubik's Cube. What's your top time?
Top time Rubik's Cube is 1 minute 40.
Ah, well, I got a 12-year-old son here who can do it in 36 seconds. So there you go.
Seriously, that's unbelievable.
And it's all, it's learning the algorithms, which fries my brain. It's like, I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. It's like 6 algorithms and then you can get to the end of it. But if you're really good at it, you can work out what algorithms you actually need. Because I do it in a little conveyor belt of like, do that one 6 times, do that one 6 times, do that one 6 times, do that one 12 times, then mess it up and then do it another 6 times and then make it work. They're great though. I love them. I absolutely love them. There's actually not much to them. It's just you need to know where to start and then you're fine.
Yeah, I did them on YouTube and I got to the last algorithm. Yeah. I'm like, I'm watching it and I still manage to mess it up. And I'm like, he's telling me what to do. And I'm getting it wrong.
It's a pain in the back. You end up getting to the part where you start putting olive oil in the cube just to move a little bit faster to see if it changes your time. But you can't change what you know up there.
So relate this back to concertina for me.
Well, it's like this. Relating this back to concertina, it's like concertina. There's nothing. There's no rhyme or reason to how it works. It just works. It just goes. It's a bit of a mental instrument, and it's just you have to figure. When Katrina came in to teach us, like the little bits that we got right and wrong, there's things for us that we didn't know how to do, like bellow control. Like it's a really big thing. Do you know what I mean? I never really looked into it for years and years and years. But if you generally have a scale pulled out, you can play the whole any scale pulled out, and also any scale pushed in. So then you can start learning how to play tunes on fully on the pull, fully on the push. So then when you find you've not got enough bellows, you've always got a way to bring it back in. Because you only want, I mean, like I stretch my bellows out for effect, like not for theatrical, well, kind of for theatrical effect as well. So, I mean, but it just so happens that. It is needed as well. Doing like big chord swells and things like that, you need that. But if you're playing like intricate pieces, if you're way out, there's no way. It's like getting a plectrum and having it like 14 centimeters long and try to play with it. Do you know what I mean? There's no control there. So that would teach me how to keep the concertina nice and tight. And then also teaching us where the actual notes were was a bit of a bonus. Do you know what I mean? But Really, I just when playing the concertina, trying to figure things out and get good at them, I would just get little riffs and little patterns and just practice away at them, just to try and get the dexterity up. Do you know what I mean? And then you find that you don't. There's nothing that can really trip you up, because you know the little stupid niche little patterns that maybe will only come up once to blue moon, but it's there. It's under the fingers. Because there wasn't many. You know how like growing up, you listen to all like. Everyone listens to like the standard like concertina players, which is like Micheál O'Reilly, Noel Hill, then like Niall Valley, then you get Podigrins, and then like all the ones growing up, and then it's like Edel Falls, Catch. There's loads and loads and loads of them growing up, but like there wasn't a lot of music from them all that you could access. I remember I used to have a cassette of Micheál O'Reilly that I would play in my room, and then I got a phone, and then I recorded the cassette into a little audio file, so I had like a set list on my phone that I could listen to it, and I'd be in the school playground listening to The Nervous Man. And I was like, I think it's cool. I don't know what else think it's cool, but I enjoyed it. Then going on from that, because there wasn't many resources, I would try and listen to other instruments, and then try and emulate what they would do. So like on a pipes, you'd have a crayon, and you would change the way you would do a roll based on the crayon. The three-finger triplet that I always do, that's what an accordion would do to do a triplet. It's a bit harder on a concertina because your buttons are little peas as opposed to having like logs of wood or logs of ivory. So it made things like fun art, and made you could expand out. I think not having a teacher meant could try different things and have like a avant-garde approach to actually learning an instrument, which for me was the making of how I played and play music. Because if I had a teacher the whole time, I would be the same as that teacher probably, or I'd be heavily influenced. Whereas I've been lucky to get like a little bit of some influence and go around different players and learn little things from them. So I thought that was a really good thing in learning the instrument. But it also meant like because I would learn how to play based off of other instruments. Like fiddles, they do different roles that they can do. Like you can, like Tom Callister does it, like he hits his pinky off and it's like drr, drr. Or you get other ones that do like the sort of traditional role and it's like da ba 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 ba. I don't know how well that's going to come across in a podcast, what I just did there.
Excellently.
Probably. Yeah. The most clarity of anything I've said there is the ba 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 ba, because you know it's nothing.
So can I ask you just a question that has a couple of different prongs to it, do you teach? I've taught banjo for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And my observance of the banjo is that it's a difficult instrument. It's a physically difficult instrument. And so for a period of time, the general standard will say, now this is a very broad strokes comment, the general standard of banjo playing was in that kind of medium range where there was a lot of people struggling with the physicality instrument and struggling with the rhythm of it, and also. And so, but my, and again, this is just my observance, is that concertina players all seem to be of a very high standard. And so I'm talking about like, say, a 15-year-old banjo player, take 20 of them, and take 20 15-year-old concertina players. Concertina players musically, rhythmically, and technically are going to be way ahead of the banjo players. And I'm just, have you any thoughts on that? Is it because of the teachers that are around? Is it the instrument?
I don't know. It's a really, really difficult one. There could be the easy suggestion, like what I would think nowadays, is concertina players, Jen, they do tend to have like an incredible rhythm because you have a bellow that is a lung. So it's actually built into the concertina. If you start thinking about the concertina as, I mean, you can get right into this and be like, it's like a body and it breathes and it has a heart and it has a pulse. It does. Do you know what I mean?
I'm all ears. Keep going.
Yeah, it really does. So if you start thinking about it like that, it is easy. No matter what you're doing, if you've got rhythm, you can pulse it and you can feel the pulse. Whereas the banjo, it's not got the same pulse fit. Like you are, if you slip up with hitting a note, you're out of sync with yourself. If you slip up hitting a note on the concertina, your bellow's still going. Do you know what I mean? You're still pushing in that direction. So it might be there's something like that for the internal rhythm. Also, maybe getting into the modern time, banjo is seen as quite a cool instrument in Ireland for like young lads. Do you know what I mean? And they all try and play fast and cool tunes. Whereas in Ireland, concertina is not like, it's not a cool, like, Wild West instrument. That is like a sit down, chillax, and play some groovy music. And also, like, you have Micheál O'Riley is like the king of, like, the king of swing. Do you know what I mean? But he's just got his groove. Like, he'd be like, as concertina players go, like, for me, like, I know, like this, Nava Valley is like king of like the cool, the triplet and all the rest of it. And then Micheál O'Riley, it's like the swing and the groove and the feel. It's beautiful. Remember that? He was my guy growing up. I was like, that's where I started loving concertina. And I think that maybe it's maybe slightly to do with who is influencing the players as well.
Where does Simon Thumir come into all of that for you?
He was like a total wild card. He was great because do you remember that thing FileZilla? Do you ever get FileZilla? Do you remember the great raid of FileZilla? It was like back in like 2010 or something like that. And somebody, I'm not going to say names, but somebody had a FileZilla, which is like a big massive Dropbox, and had every single album and trad on this. And then somebody who remains nameless, that plays the pipes, gave one of my friends a copy of this, the password, and then that got passed around, and I got a copy of the password, and every single person that tried to enter a copy of this password, which like was just like the biggest, it's basically like Spotify before Spotify. So everyone had all, like, just randomly, it was like every single album in the whole of trad. It was unbelievable. And then I just felt like I just downloaded and got every single thing. So then at that point, I got like, I figured out who like Simon Thumir was, who like Fluke were, who Lunasa were, like all these incredible bands when all the music had already been released as well. So Simon Thumir came into the mix at that point, and I was like, holy hell, this is amazing. He has one album called A Big Day In, and it is absolutely incredible. He also does this, I'm quite into like, in a studio, I'm like, we'll go in, we'll do a couple of takes, and then we'll make sure those takes perfect, and then move on. Whereas, like, Simon will go in, and he'll be like, let's get it all done today. I want it to be exactly the music I'm playing. I want it to be, like, it's great, but it's him playing. Do you know what I mean? It was just amazing. It was absolutely incredible. I'm pretty sure they recorded the whole thing in a day, and they did one tune called, like, The Drunken Sailor. I think, is it The Drunken Sailor? Saying The Drunken Sailor and playing the concertina sounds very, 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 like, so it sounds awful, but it's like the most technical piece of it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. But also, Simon, when I was younger, he was judging a fish, and I did some of the concertina. I came first because it was just me, as it was pretty much every single time I entered the concertina, unless it was two people, in which case I would genuinely come second every single time. I don't think I've ever beat someone on the concertina, which is... it's mental. I was like, literally, these people played the concertina as their second instrument, and they were just like towering above me. I'm like, how can I not get anything in these competitions? But it made me drive. It gave me drive. Anyway, Simon was Simon was judging one of these competitions, and he totally believes in not. He, you know that little analogy of like, think outside the box, and then the ant's running around, and then you draw a circle around it, and the ant's stuck in the circle, and that to an effect. Well. It's a thing.
I'd like to hear more about that. You described it pretty well. I get the idea.
I tend to be very good with my descriptions. Very clear. Very to the point. But he just like wants you to think outside the box. So in cultists, obviously, in the competitions, they want you to, they don't want you to, they need you to. They need you to play a certain way. And it's all regimented, and it's got its positives, and it's got its many, many flaws. But that's what it is. Whereas Simon's like, just expand, just think, don't stay regimented in this thing. Just think outside the box, do your thing. And then actually it was like, come round to the house, and he just invited me around to his house a couple of times. Just gave me like, just for free, just gave us some lessons, just for the crack, and had all these like weird and wonderful ways of doing music, kid. And the first thing from all these weird and wonderful ways, he was like, just start playing that tune, but just put no ornaments in it. And then you start being like, oh, you're not really in control of what you're playing. You only realize when he's trying to take everything out that you can't help it. It's like a nervous tick putting things in, and then when you do take it out, you start getting more control. So it helped me loads in like different ways. Do you know what I mean? All these like frantic players that you think are just like, oh no, play like this, play like this. But actually, like, just bring it down and be as controlled as you possibly can, and then add stuff. Drew, bake your cake with some flour.
That's fascinating to me, and it puts a lot in context, because as when we were kids and doing the competitions, and of course I struggled massively in the FLA because I was in Egypt, and I couldn't be held back. It sort of rubbed me up the wrong way that I had to play in a certain way. So instead of that, I would start to self-sabotage by playing crazy stuff and not winning a fraction of what I could have won. But I was delighted with myself as well at the same time. Over the years, would have looked at the Mike McGoldricks and the Simon Tumiers and so many other musicians that were playing Irish music. They weren't from the island of Ireland. And they came with a freedom.
That's true.
Because they weren't limited by the strictures that were placed on the overall tradition in Ireland by cultists who do fantastic work.
Yeah, it's a funny one. It's actually, I remember when you found out, like, Mike McGoldrick, John Joe Kelly, Desi Donnelly, Ed Boyd, all English. It's like they're all from there. And then I suppose there's a lot from the north. They still have quotes to the rest, but the north are kind of they're like Scotland. Do you know what I mean? So it's amazing that it's really interesting to look into that and see that maybe cultists is good. I've always thought cultists is good until a point. I think they're really good for teaching, because the standard of musicianship in Ireland under 18 is unparalleled anywhere. Do you know what I mean? If you come to Scotland, I mean, people are great under 18 over here, but the difference is, I even felt it when I was younger. I was like, I can't, there's no way I can match anyone over here. Do you know what I mean? I will try, but there's no way I can even be in a par. But then when people go over 18, they keep, I see Ireland stay there, and then the other ones keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. So it's, I think I've always said cultists is amazing until you're 18. And then after that, you've made your friends, you've won your flies, go make some music.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Are all concertinas the same? Could you pick up a concertina anywhere in the world and know where the notes are?
You can for the first 30, maybe.
That's loads of notes.
Well, that's the effect, but it's not the notes you want.
That's more notes than on the banjo, for kind of.
I know, yeah.
The first 30.
It's a lot of notes, a lot of pushing and pulling. There's obviously famously Jeffries and Wheatstone layouts on concertina, and the biggest thing in it is just there's like opposing C sharps. Do you know what I mean? So one of them has a C sharp that pulls, one of them has a C sharp that pushes. That's basically it for the first 30 buttons. After that, you get a lot of people. So I've got a 38 button concertina. Generally, concertinas go from, you can get 20 buttons, but there's no point. Don't get a 20 button. If you're going to get a 20 button, just don't. Just get a button accordion. If you want two rows, get a button accordion. That's all you need to do. But there's the 30 buttons are kind of a standard. It goes up to 38, and they have, there's two layouts. I think there's maybe a few layouts, but for myself with the 38 key, I thought there was improvements to be made. I thought there was a few improvements that could be made. So then I got in touch with Suttner and I made my own layout for the other 8 buttons. Which made the concertina fully chromatic, bar like 4 notes, up 4 octaves, which for an instrument that size is absolutely incredible. And it opened a few new options. So if I was going to do a Talis gig and my concertina broke and use someone else's concertina, it would be quite difficult to play it to the standard. I could, and you could get away with it, but it's quite difficult. And then the feel of them are all so different. It's like with every instrument, it feels different. The whoop, like a flute, you have to blow harder, blah 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 blah, blah. The action's too high in a banjo. But I find generally concertinas are quite stiff. If you've got an old concertina, which a lot of people do have, like your Jeffries and your Wheatstones, and they're quite hard to play, which might also be a deciding factor in the way people do play, because it is harder to play these older Jeffries, and that is a sought after instrument in Ireland, and everyone gets a Jeffries. It can be also lightning quick. I've got Jeffries that is faster than anything you've ever seen in your life, but I've also played them, and I'm like, I couldn't get half the speed out of it. So to answer your question, yes and no.
Are you at the technical level that you want to be at?
You're never at the technical level you want to be at, and you never will be. You're never, ever close to it. I remember one time being like, I don't know what I can do now to become better. And then I just, I sat down and I genuinely sat down for ages. And I was like, I don't know what to do. Because I didn't know what direction to go. I didn't know at all. And then I just like, something clicked one day and I was like, oh my God. And then I found out that I was just at like 3% up the ladder. It's a constant struggle, but I love it. It's great.
Your biog, which I read, says you were studying chemical engineering and decided to be a full-time musician. Just talk us through that transition, because that's pretty fascinating for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I actually started in school. I was going to do medicine. I was always going to do medicine. And then in sixth year, I did a first aid course, saw some blood, fainted. And that was that. So I had the UCAT you have to go to. I'd been studying for the UCAT test, and then my friend, I had everything ready to go. I had all ready to apply to all the five unis. And then my friend at the end of it, when she found out I couldn't do it, she was like, why don't you just do like chemical engineering? And I was like, yeah, cool. But I love maths. I'm quite good at maths. And I really enjoy math. And I'm good at chemistry. I did all three sciences at school. So I was like, I could fit into that. No bother at all. Went to Strathclyde Uni to do chemical engineering. Was there for like 2.5 years. On the second year, you have to do 6 lab reports and all 3,000 words each. And this comes back to the FLA ruining my life again. So it was on the night before the FLA, and everyone was asleep. And we're in the house. My mate was around. And I was finishing the lab report, and I was just like, cool, Phil's not finished it. He was like, can we just go down to my house, fall asleep, and we'll go to the flat in the morning? And I was like, we can do that. I was like, but I need to finish it. I was like, I need to finish this, and you submit them all at the same time. So I finished it 18,000 words later, finished it, and then he was like, right, let's go. And I was like, woo, let's go to the flat. Closed my laptop, thrown it up in the air. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Woo, we're going to the flat. And then went round to his house. Why I went round to his house to submit it instead of submitting it when I finished it, I do not know. Went round, opened my laptop, and there was just this folder that was broken in half. And it was like, your hard drive has crashed. And that was it. 18,000. I took it to lab. Nothing. There's no saving it. So then I failed the lab, and I was like, but I've done all the work. I've done the labs. You have to log so many hours to do it. So then I went back, and then so I had to. And it's obviously that was just like a kind of like sidetracky bit of it. I had to just reset that one in the third year, and then going through it, I was like, I don't really enjoy this. And then got out offered halfway through the year to do a dance show, which will remain nameless as well, because I got paid like £36 a night or something like that. But I was playing guitar on it. So I think like something like €200 a week you were getting for this dance show, doing 6 shows or 7 shows a day, and getting your breakfast provided. That was it. So I bought a guitar for like something like £1,500, bought all the pedals for like £300, then got all my stuff, so like £2,000 later, had this ready to go, and then the tour made less than what the guitar cost. So I ended up coming back from this tour with like £300, but it was my out. It was my way to be like, I'm wanting to do music. So did that, slowly left music, left uni without telling my parents.
I'm still tickled with the tagline. Experienced musical slavery inspired me to become a full-time musician.
It's that. That's exactly what it is. That could be the title of the podcast. But we, what was it? So did that, slowly left uni. When I came back, I was like, I'm going to need to, I was sitting at home, so I didn't really need money, to be fair, because I didn't have rent, but you need to be doing something. So my friend, who helped run the Coatless branch, ran a roofing company, and he said I can work for him any day I want. So I ended up becoming a roofer for like 3 years, was doing roofing, and instead of like having like a full-time job that I worked full-time, like it was like we would be going out at like 6 a.m. and get back at 6 p.m. Roofing away, and I did genuinely love it. But he was like, you can do this, and then whenever you have a rehearsal, a gig, whatever, you can get all the time off you want. You won't get holiday pay, but you can get all the time off. And I was like, it's just like gigging. Do you mean you get paid for the gigs you do? You don't get paid for the gigs you don't do. So did that for like 3 years. And mum slowly found out that I wasn't at uni from the fact that I was coming back with roofing gear on every single day. I could have kept it a secret until today. But she's a regular listener to the podcast. She's going to find out now.
Hey, Mum, surprise.
I know.
Not in college all these years later.
I know. We've been failing for 14 years. So I was doing roofing, and then that was going really well. And then I was, I would equate a gig. So on the roofs, we were getting, I've done a lot of things for not very much money. So we were getting like £45 a day on the roofs. So when I got like a session in Glasgow, I'd be like, oh, well, if I get a session, I can have the day off. Hilariously worked in. I was like, if I go for a night out, I can get the day off, which is kind of the perfect thing that everyone's always wanted in their life. Do you know what I mean? You go out, don't need to work. Great. So we go out, and then I slowly like build up having sessions, and like you'd be getting like 7 days a week of music money, and then slowly be able to. That's the dog. The dog wants to be involved. She's pretty yappy.
Yes, cute. Dogs are.
She's cute. But to be honest, I'm going to tell her shush. To be honest. She heard. So I slowly build up with that. And then it got to a point where, so it's Phil Doherty. Phil Doherty, he's a really good friend of mine. And he was co-owner of the roofing company. And then we'd tell everybody, because I played music with his son as well. I'd be telling everybody about how I played music, blah, blah, blah. And then we'd do some gigs, whatever. So everyone would know that I was the person playing music in the building site. And then every time the gaffers would be like, you need to get out of here. It's like, you need to get out of here. You need to go spread your back. You need to leave. It's like, you're wasted here. And then, honestly, it's hilarious. Me and my friend were on the roofs. We're like, oh, we're destined. We're destined for different things. We need to leave the roofs and we need to go and fly our wings. And hilariously now, my mate is now a producer on Netflix, and then I'm touring the world playing music. So actually, that's work out.
Wow. So thank God for all those old guys living vicariously through the two young roofers, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. But actually, it all hit ahead after when I entered the Young Musician of the Year. After that, that was my last week roofing. And then after that, I never roofed again. I just played music the whole time. So it's been through quite a lot of things, and I've really enjoyed them. It's been really, really, really fun. I also taught you, like, also doing the roofing, you're working so hard, and probably a lot of people like getting into music that haven't done any other jobs maybe haven't realized like the worth of like getting £200 for a ceilidh or something like that. Do you mean, it's like £200 is almost a week's wage working 12 hours a day on the roofs. Do you mean, so yeah. You do start appreciating money a lot more, which I think is pretty important, to be completely honest.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. I had a day job for 16 years prior to We Banjo 3 taking off, so I know what it's like to put in a 40-hour grind. And...
yeah, I know. Like actually working.
Yeah.
And, it's not working, is it? There's no working involved.
I did it and did two gigs a day and taught banjo lessons at the same time as well. So
that's a heavy schedule.
It's a one way route to the psychiatric unit. That's what that is.
I know, but then all your friends are there.
all the other banjo players.
I know.
And the guy is trying to figure out where G sharp is on the concertina. I hear you.
I couldn't find the psych. I can't find G sharp. I can't find the psychiatric unit. But it's good, and now we're absolutely flying, having a great time.
Yeah, Talisk is flying.
We've been going for ages now. Like it's been like 7 years now. We've completely changed our lineup since it started, which I'm trying not to look into too personally. It's hard to avoid the facts, though, isn't it? It's changed. Like, it's like Craig, we started at me, Hayley and Craig started it. We're best of friends, still really good friends. And like, I talk to Hayley every day. I can't get rid of her. Not most people, because some people can get agents straight away and then they can figure out maybe what they have to do. But if you don't have like any like the management or agents or anything, it's really hard to figure out what to do. You just kind of throwing muck at the wall and hoping it sticks. But we had a really good time doing it. We were lucky enough to win a few awards. We won a folk award like 3 months into the band forming, which sprung us into gigging. We got, like, after that, you got Cambridge Folk Festival, Cropperty Festival, and Towersley Festival, which are all like 5,000 to 10,000 cap festivals. And for a band that only had two sets, it was great and quite daunting as well. And then maybe, because I remember we did Towersley, and something that we got after like the travel down in a car, we got something like £1 a gig is what we actually made. And maybe that was representative of what we were worth because we only had two sets anyway. So we were just busking along. But no, it was, I mean, like, I do believe that the money should probably go up from these festivals for bands coming in, to be honest. But the opportunity to do it was very good for us. And we managed to make, we made a good relationship with Cambridge, and we always go back to Cambridge. We go back to Cambridge quite a lot. And like, I mean, like 3 years ago, we closed our main stage on a Saturday night, which is like, it's an amazing, amazing experience, amazing gig to get. So we've done quite a lot of fun things through that, but we learned as we went along quite fast. And then even when we came on tour with yous, I was like, I've never seen merch sold so well in my entire life. I saw Fergal like a week ago, and he just saw the merch set up and he was like, interesting. I'm always looking.
where I mean, that's a good, that was kind of leads into my next question, is like, where do you sit with the whole art versus business?
I mean they go hand in hand, don't they? If you lose the art bit, then it's going to be hard to do the business, is kind of how I see it. But it depends what you want to get in music, doesn't it? Everyone wants their art to thrive. So then you push as much as you can into that, and then naturally the money then would go up, so the business thrives. So like, I mean, they're both like, you can't have one without the other, actually. But if you're into your music, you can't have one without the other. I would pick art over business. If someone said you can get nothing, but you can live a stable life, but you can play whatever you want, I'd be like, yeah. Or you can be a millionaire, but you can't play that. I'd be like, I'll take the art over it, because that's how I got into it. Otherwise, I'd just be a chemical engineer. Do you know what I mean? Things like that. But I've learned a lot from like yourselves and different bands that we've toured with. As like, you have to be really savvy with business, or you're not going to be able to push your art to the right places anyway. Do you know what I mean? So I think you really have, if you don't have somebody driving at the helm with a good business mind, or even an agent or a manager that can push that side, then it's going to be quite difficult to make your music happen. Do you know what I mean? Take it to different places. You'll end up just doing the same thing over and over and over again, and probably getting bored. Do you know what I mean? So it works. It works in two ways. But I see them working hand in hand, and there can be a beautiful relationship between them both.
Do you enjoy both aspects of it?
I do. I enjoy both of them. A lot of people really don't. I've talked to like me and David Foley, like years ago, wanted to, not that we're absolute like geniuses at how to start bands, but I mean, pretty good at starting bands. I started about 100 bands when I was trying to make Talis. and we were like, let's just start a business where we can just like tell bands not to make money, just to be like, just almost like consultants, free consultants, that you would come and say, I want to make a band, what should I do? And I'd be like, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And that is all the basic steps to making a band. And then we did talk to some people and do it. And but people generally don't realise that they do work hand in hand. You have to put this bit of effort in. Have a lot of people, like I'm an open book, so I'll tell you, there's only one thing I won't tell anybody anything about. It's like, this is a guy that does our graphics because I love him. I love him. He's mine. I want him. I need him. I want him every single week, giving him something new to do. But I'm like, that sort of thing. I was like, I don't want someone to steal the style. But anything, pedals, how we make things, like sponsoring, videos, all the rest of it, I will tell anyone anything at all. I remember some people were just like, why are you giving away all the secrets? I'm like, because it doesn't matter if you give them all away. They still have to do it. Do you know what I mean? You can tell me how to play the banjo. I'm not going to be able to play like you. Do you know what I mean? Unless I put in like 20 years of work. Do you know what doing. And there's that bit that people don't get when they're making a band or making music. And if they did, like, there would be, there's so much more, the scene would be absolutely humongous. There used to be a glass ceiling, a really, really strong glass ceiling in the trad industry, because people didn't do shows, people did gigs. Do you know what I mean? But now people are changing it, making it slightly, like, it's theatrical. Do you mean a gig's theatrical? Do you mean? And now, like, with Talis, we've got like a light show and all the rest. Like, it's massive light show. It's like you've been at a techno rave. Do you mean? So, like, if we were playing in like a Lower Tillsbury Arts Centre, like, insert random name art club, it'd be a really different gig. So now we have to, like, base it around what we're doing. So I mean, the glass ceiling of the genre has been completely pushed. And if more people got into the business side of it, it'd be massive. Trad music would be humongous. Do you know what I mean? Imagine Riverdance didn't have a business mind. Irish music would be a thing.
Try it.
I mean, we're gone.
Do you have a, you know, speaking of business, do you have like a 5-year plan? Do you have places that you want to get to? Are there steps on the ladder that you're aiming at?
We didn't for ages because actually it's when we got started with our new sound engineer, Steve Richmond. So Stevie, he runs a business called Coda and he does the Chili Peppers and all the rest of it as well. And he was like, if you find yourself doing all the work, then there's nobody there. If you find yourself doing all the, you're like, sending the merch and doing the emails and do blah, blah, blah. It's like, there's nobody thinking about the bigger picture stuff at the other side of it to push you to the next level. And I was like, never thought about like someone actually having to, I mean, like learning as I go along. Never thought of it as being someone has to sit down and say, oh, we want to do this, we want to push this to this next place and get there. So it's only in the last year and a half, we've always had massive aspirations, but like small steps. So like our like doing the tour reviews, but like we can do our own tour and then push it that way. And then that was a two-year plan. Do you know what I mean? We've always had like little 2-year plans, and it's only now we're starting to get into like having like a 5-year plan. So now we do have like markers, and it's, and maybe to be fair, I'll be being honest, it's like a 4-year plan is what we've got at the moment of where we want to push things and different, because you have to, like, we've got ideas for like collab tours and things like that and like big things to push us. And in the UK, we like maybe like 3 years ago we were doing like 200 caps and selling out some of them and not selling out other ones. Now we're at going up to 600 caps and selling out like maybe like 60% of a lot of them. Like, so some of them maybe 200 to 600 caps, selling out 60% of them. And then we're like, how do you get that to the thousands? And that's where the 4-year plan has came into place, and like you can team up and make things happen. So now we have that in place, which is like, which, I mean, if we knew that at the start, probably have accelerated us a bit faster. Do you know what I mean? Just like the, like, you know, in lockdown, people are doing like videos and then doing collab videos. And it's like, oh, there's actually different ways to achieve like your follower count or blah, 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 whatever you want to get. So yeah, it's on the right track now. And we've figured out different ways to accelerate music. Even as simple as working with a promoter. Do you know what I mean? Don't put a gig on yourself, put a gig on with somebody that's put a gig on.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's so simple, but it just takes somebody being like, we also have to get to a stage where someone would want to work with you as well. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it just takes someone just being like, well, why don't you do this? And you're like, oh, that's a good idea. So Talis, we've got a good plan of things happening, and then we've got our 10-year anniversary coming up as well. So potentially, well, I'm not going to say what we're going to do, but we've got big plans for a big event, which will hopefully involve a lot of people. So and
Haley, my favorite.
Yeah, there was Chancellor the other day about it. It's obviously going to be like, we'll get everybody that's been involved as well involved. Haley the other day was like, I was chatting to her and she said, we're playing up in Aberdeen, so she's teaching up in Aberdeen now. And she said to me, she's like, he's coming to Aberdeen. I was like, yeah. She's like, can I get, because I always put in, like, Haley obviously has like unlimited access, she's got the Black Nandles card for Talisk. And she was saying, she's like, can I get like a +4 for the guest list for Aberdeen? And I was like, only if you tell me you love me. And she's like, just you remember who started this band. I was like, damn, don't tell anybody that. I'll just tell everyone and end this podcast.
Do you like touring?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I do love it. I go to go into it more and more because we've got Emar as well as Talisk. It's like the two of them does kind of they merge into each other, so you can be gone away for. I mean, you can be gone away for like 2 or 3 months at a time. So that I remember talking to you, like, cause it's like talking about being away from, like, you've got like a family. Do you know what I mean? So that's it'd be harder. That'd be harder for you. Definitely, then I've got like a relationship, I've got a girlfriend, and that's hard, but a family is harder than that. So I do imagine, well, we're kind of in this at the same time because Graham's got a child and twins on the way now. He's going to have twins. He finally got twins on the way.
And so, he's going to need that 4-year plan.
He's going to need that 4-year plan. You mean that 4-year exit?
Or a 14-year plan.
You know, yeah. He's got an exit strategy. It's become an accountant or something like that. But do you know any guitarists coming? No, Graham is not. We're not letting him leave. He's staying.
He's too bloody good.
He's brilliant, man. But I suppose with... So I don't mind being away a lot. I do like being home and the rest of it. And after, like, I would say, like, after, like, COVID and mum getting really ill, I do like being home a lot more because, like, you want to spend time. I took it for granted, like, really took it for granted before. But now I don't take it for granted, like, seeing my family and seeing things like that. Because you don't have that. You won't have that forever. Do you know what I mean? So you really, like... I don't think until you've had something really bad happen that you realise how much you need it and you should be there. And don't live with don't live with regrets. I'm getting wee teary. I always get teary when I think about that. I always do.
Oh yeah, but, it makes certain sense.
Yeah, but it doesn't hold me back from touring, but that would always be on my mind. I don't want to be away for too long. But it's quite easy with Talisk because Graham has a child as well. So he's like, unless it's financially worth it to be away for that extra week on tour, then why are we away for that extra week? Why don't we just split it up and do it in the next tour? You don't need to be away for more than 3 weeks. Do you know what I mean? You can be away 3 weeks, come back for a couple of days, go back away for 3 weeks. There's nothing. You sort your own schedule. You know what I mean? We can only not sort out festivals, but festivals are on the weekends. So I love it. It can get quite a bit much after a while. But I think we've made it happen in a way that it doesn't ever get too tiring. I always enjoy it. And also, when Talisk go off tour, I get to go on tour with Emar, and the crack is honestly incredible. It's amazing. Do you know what I mean? And it's really different crack to Talisk. Do you know what I mean? The Talisk crack is unbelievable. I love it. I love both sides. And you get a complete, it's just like seeing, and you know, if you hang with the same person all the time, you're like, cool, but I know all your jokes. I don't know his jokes. I'm going to listen to them. So it keeps it fresh. It keeps it fun. I think if I didn't have two, though, I would find it quite difficult always going away because it would become the same thing all the time. It'd always be really fun, but I just love that, a different dynamic in your life. Do you know what I mean? You can have it from, like, you know, like you go home and you go fishing. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, your fishing is like, I don't know, but I imagine it's your other outlet where you're like, oh, this is a really good change of dynamic. Whereas fishing's my Emar. I love that. You know what I mean? Things like that I really enjoy. It makes touring much more fun and much more sustainable on the long term of like a big, a mass tour of being away for 3 months. So to answer your question, I absolutely love it and will not be stopping anytime soon. Nice.
What do you do to unwind? Like, do you have a fishing that's not Emar? Because a lot of folks that I'd say, what do you do when you're not on tour? They go, oh, yeah, I just play music at home.
I know, yeah. Unfortunately, I just end up, like, my people that I go out with when I get home are, like, Benny and Ryan Murphy. So, like, whenever we get back from a tour, we all meet up, and it's just like being on tour back again. So, I don't know, I go to the gym quite a lot. But I do just play music, to be honest. To be honest, when I come back home, I don't really play that much music. I just go and see my friends. I mostly say my outlet is like a social life. As much as music is like the most sociable thing, you're seeing those people, I just love seeing my friends when I get back. Because I remember one year I was only back like home, like I slept in my own bed like 6 times or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So I think whenever I come back, I'm like, I want to be present with all my friends and keep that going. Going for coffees. I don't really drink coffee. I don't care much about coffee, which is really, really different to the Wee Banjo 3 approach. I slowly get into it.
I think we ended up being less able for the caffeinated state as the years went on, but
really, yeah. Just decaf.
So you're like, I've spent a lot of time around you over the years, and like you're super high energy and very, very positive. But do you struggle with anything?
I thought this loads. Let me try and get my thoughts in order so I can say it in a way that makes sense. I see whenever I'm around people, like, so I remember one time we were with my mate. He was a bit drunk, right? But he was fine. He was totally fine, but he was a bit drunk. And then we're going down to Liverpool, and he kept going like that. He was like, "That's one beautiful looking handbrake you've got there, Mawson. It'd be a shame if someone pulled it." And I was like, "Look," I was like, "Do not pull a handbrake when someone's driving a car on the motorway." I was like, "That," and I just met that is one of my really good mates there, right? I've just met him, and I was like, "Do not, you dare, don't touch this handbrake." And then we're going down. He was like, "It's 90% a show." It's just 90% sure, 10% I might actually pull that handbrake. But no, it's like, but with me, with the whole thing, it's like, I'm going out, whenever I see people, I do generally get, and it's not like it's a show, I get really excited, and I'm like, this is amazing, I love being around people, I love making people happy, like, I don't have it on, it's like, I love that film, The Greatest Showman, it's my favourite film, but it says, there's a quote in it, and I have it on like a dog tag that I wear everywhere I go, and it just says, the noblest of art is that of making others happy, and I think that's a real, I love that, I'm so into that. So I love being like, energetic, really, really positive, really happy, and really, I am genuinely happy to see everybody and really enjoy all the rest of it, but when I go home, I'm just like, I just go like this, and I'm really quiet, and there's nothing, like, I remember I was doing a tour, and it was with our mate Sean Gray, and then I was chatting to one of my mates, and he was like, he's not the monster that you see out, is he? He's like, he's always just like kind of chilled out, and I genuinely am just really chilled out in the van. I'll sit down doing like work or whatever, and just be like calm. So like, it's not like I wouldn't really struggle with it being positive, being the attitude outside. I just have like a balance of it, so it's not all like hyper. It's like, it's only at those points it's like all up, and then there are times I have my downtime. You can struggle with it a lot. The thing I struggle with a lot is like people know you, they judge you straight away. Do you know what I mean? They judge everything. So then they all think, oh, he's crazy. He's absolutely mental. I'm like, well, and then some people take it in like a really positive way, and then some people take it in a negative way. And you're like, you don't even know. You've never even met me. I was like, you can't make an opinion based on, like, we're not celebrities. You can't make polls about people and think you know what they're doing, what, who they are, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I'd say like, sometimes when you meet people, like, I met another person, obviously, I'm good friends with this person, I'm good, I get to meet a lot of people that I get to become really good friends with, because we're all really good people, and really good fun, and then they were like, I thought you were going to be a bit of a, well, I'm not going to say it because I want to censor it, but like, I thought you were going to be a bit of a beep, and then, you're actually a really nice guy, and I was like, I know, I know I am, I just promote myself because I'm a musician, that's, because people see self-promotion as like, you're ignorant, you're like, you're up yourself, you're cocky, blah, 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 but it's like, you don't get pissed off at Milk for advertising that it's Milk, do you know what I mean, that's what I am, I'm just Milk. So that's the only thing I would struggle with is that sort of thing. But I don't really, being completely honest, I don't really care, because when I know you and you know me, then it's great. But before that, I don't know anyone. I don't, until you reach out, I've never known you, so we don't exist to each other. But when we do meet, we will, it'll be great. It'll be great fun. So that's the only thing that I'd say is a wee niggly point, that in the music career, music in general, is a thing. But it's never something that's actually around you. And when it is around you, it's all good. I just find sometimes you have to make a little bit extra effort with people because there's a predetermined idea in their head. Other than that, I'm all fun and games, having a really good time. Do you know what I mean? I have the best life in the world. I absolutely love it. I have a healthy family and get to play the music I love around the world. And it's now starting to really kick off, which is like, it's really fun. It's amazing. So yeah.
That's a fantastic answer and a wonderful way to finish, I think. And yeah. I'm gonna take away that quote, the noble art of making others happy. That's awesome.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really
good. And if I can say, I think you do a fantastic job at that.
Well, thank you very much. I'll try my best.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.